funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So I want to start off the show today, lads, with a tribute, a thank you to all of the inter-county footballers, especially footballers rather than hurlers, because hurlers are playing provincial championships, which involve no travel. The footballers have had to endure two rounds of National League. You have Laois players going up to Fermanagh, and you have them stopping in the Mullaghorin Club in Cavan and eating their dinner in a cold stand after doing the warm-up before the Fermanagh match. You have Donegal boys driving the whole length of the country to Kerry for a game that they didn't even want to play in, so it was only a nuisance to them. You have Antrim players giving up home advantage to accommodate Waterford, who didn't want to travel up to Antrim, and to beat them anyways. You have Fermanagh travelling to Clare with half a team. You have Armagh playing Roscommon in a top-of-the-table clash after missing maybe 18 players and first-teamers in the lead-up to the game. Like, I mean, I think, because there's a very negative narrative around this, Kieran, and I think it's important to say thank you to all the players and not to underestimate the commitment that they're giving us in some incredible times.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, the commitment the players throughout Ireland are showing over in this current climate is brilliant. You know, as you mentioned there, that the boundaries and the protocols that the players have to go through to make themselves available to go to training two nights a week, and then to go and play that match of the weekend. And, you know, once they come out of that environment from training and their daily work routine, you know, them boys are living in a wee bubble of their own to give them the best opportunity and give their county the best chance to anticipate in these matches. And not alone that, but to give people in each county a bit of hope and a bit of light and something to look forward to the weekend.
Yeah, and I think that's the important point, because Sean O'Shea was doing some media this weekend or during the week, and he says, hopefully we can give them, that's the supporters, something to look forward to. Level 5 will be tough with the nights getting dark and people stuck at home. If we have a match at the weekend, people will probably start on a Tuesday or Wednesday talking about it, ringing their friends and finding out about the game. And Conor, like, I strongly believe that a lot of the players' motivation for doing this, like, obviously they love the game and it's a good distraction for them, but it's a pain in their arses as well what they're having to go through to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Kieran made a good point, and Sean O'Shea made a good point there as well about it's only at the weekend. Like, it's been said a lot about it, kind of giving people something to look forward to, giving them a bit of hope and something like that. But I didn't realise it myself until the weekend. So we were, what, 3 or 4 days into level 5 restrictions at the weekend. And there was me on my Saturday night and Sunday basically planned out, because I had a whole series of matches to look forward to, basically, you know. And like, the weekend would have been a lot more grim, I think, without it. So certainly from my perspective anyway. So it's just, I think, and then I think we just see these teams, you know, turn up and play in the TV, whatever. And then when you go into the stories behind it, thinking of Donegal lads having to go, you know, travel individually in cars down to Kerry, as the Kerry lads had to do in Monaghan the week before. And it's just, we tend to underestimate the sacrifices that these lads are making, especially given everything else they have to deal with as well, with what's going on. So just like, I'm glad you paid that tribute, Woolly. I was worried you were getting a bit emotional on me, but very well said, and very well deserved for everyone you mentioned.
I think Kieran McGeaney was asked about celebrating getting promoted, and he said 12 hours of celebrating in the car going up the road, that was it. Now, I don't know how slowly you drive in Armagh, Kieran, but I'm not sure how it takes 12 hours to get back to Armagh from Clare. But anyway, listen, the championship is kicking off, lads, and this has to be pointed out, that it's kind of slipped under the radar. Like, I mean, it doesn't have the feel that the championship is kicked off. I don't know about you, and it's knockout. So we're going to talk about Tyrone Donegal very soon. And it's very, very hard to get our head around the fact that either Donegal or Tyrone are going to be completely out of the championship, you know, after this weekend, Kieran. I don't know if you have processed this yet.
Yeah, look, you know, it's strange times and you know, the knockout. And I think, you know, the closer we get to the weekend, the more appetite that people's going to have with it. You know, when you start buying the newspaper and reading the articles leading into the matches, and you know, in this game that lies ahead on Sunday between Tyrone and Donegal, like, you know, one of the big guns is going to be gone come Sunday evening.
Yeah, it just seems like so. It's so weird, right? So I was thinking back, the last knockout football championship was in 2000. I was unlucky enough to be playing back in 2000 that year because we lost to Westmeath. It was our only championship game. Just think back to these times. Like, you train all year, you play the league. We played Westmeath on the 5th of June on a bank holiday Monday, and we lost. And we were out. We were out. That was the end of our championship on the 5th of June. And it just seems so bizarre to even think about that now. But that was the world we lived in now. And it was funny, on that same day, the Laois hurlers lost to Dublin before us. So both Laois inter-county teams were out on June the 5th. Like, I mean, there was no summer whatsoever. Like, I don't know, Conor, we're back to that now. Obviously, it has a different feel to it. And, you know, we're coming into winter and it's a special championship and everything. But it's straight knockout and someone is out of the championship on Monday morning.
I wonder, Woolly, did the Laois football teams and hurling teams get together on that bank holiday or the Tuesday? Probably went down for a good few days after that.
I think we had to go drinking up in Dublin because we were afraid to go back to Port Laois after it.
Fair enough. But it hasn't dawned on me yet until I was kind of looking into Donegal Tyrone this weekend and thinking, God, like, you know, like, one of these teams are going to be gone. Come, like, two of the heavyweight, two of the prime contenders are going to be gone. And you could argue that, like, some of the, if this game took place another year, sometimes you could argue that, like, because there's the safety net there, that, you know, the maybe the intensity of some of these games might have suffered kind of over the years, only in certain cases, like, you know. But I was even just thinking that from, like, even from a Mayo, looking at it from a Mayo perspective, like, if Mayo don't win a Connacht, like, Mayo haven't won a Connacht title since, like, Mayo have been thereabouts, but haven't won a Connacht title since 2015. And if they want to be there at the business end of the season this year, they have to go and do that. So it's only now that I'm kind of looking at, you know, like, come 2 or 3 weeks time, we're like, half the teams are going to be gone completely, and we just haven't been used to that for 20 years. So
no.
I don't know, because it doesn't have the same hype about it, because to be honest, for me, I'm looking at a championship in October, which is completely strange as opposed to the height of summer and stuff. But listen, it's going to come tick. I was even looking at the pictures. It's going to come thick and fast. But while there's teams going to be gone, there's always going to be something to look forward to in the week to come. And we're catered for right up until Christmas as well.
Yeah. Incidentally, Mayo in 2000 lost to Sligo in the Connacht Championship. And Sligo went on to lose by 18 points to Galway. I'm not saying if that's any sort of an omen. You'll be happy to hear Armagh won the Ulster, Kieran. So, like, I mean, I don't know. Again, oh, it's funny enough, I remember back to that 2000 Championship, lads. And I played in 1998. That was knockout as well. And then I had disappeared off the Laois panel in 99, which wouldn't have been out of character for me. And then in 2000, I destroyed my ankle, right? And it's just the idea of knockout. So 10 days before the match, you know those really bad ankle injuries where you go over on it and it turns black, blue, it goes down to your toes, the black, it goes into your calf muscle. You just make shit of it. And because I'd missed the year before, and because I knew, Jesus, if I don't play this game against Westmeath, I'm 2 years out now and I'm only 20 years of age. This is a disaster. And I played that match with a strapped up ankle against Westmeath that day purely because this is my only shot for a full year. You know what I mean, Kieran? Like, I mean, I know players look after themselves a bit more now because potentially you obviously have a back door usually.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, you know, once it's a straight knockout, like, you know, your season goes very quickly and the years don't be long adding up if you don't get any momentum on them years that it's a straight knockout. And I think players will be looking towards that at the weekend, that, you know, they'll not want to kind of, it's been a tough year and the opportunity arises this weekend for a number of teams, and they'll want to stay in this championship as long as they can. And as we said earlier on the show, to bring a bit of hope and a bit of life to their county that they're representing.
Yeah. Now, the reason I brought up that ankle injury is because I was reading some quotes from Killian O'Connor. Now, I'm not saying back in my day it was tough for Connor, and I'm not saying Killian O'Connor is soft in any way. He'd be tough on the field. But wait till you hear this quote. He didn't play against Galway last weekend, and here's the reason why. It was just a little bang on my quad. I was hoping to play against Tyrone even after the Galway. Or sorry, he didn't play against Tyrone because of the Galway game. He says, it was just a little bang on my quad, and I was hoping to play against Tyrone even after the Galway game. I had a bit of a run around on Saturday, the day before, just to clear it, and it just wasn't 100% right. Now, are the Mayo lads soft that a little bang on the quad is going to stop you playing against Tyrone just because it wasn't 100% right? I didn't know players waited to be 100%. What's wrong with 98% right?
You're saying you're not calling Killian O'Connor soft boy. That's exactly what you're doing right there.
I was just thinking, what would Roy Keane's reaction to Killian O'Connor saying he got a little bang on the quad?
An outrageous accusation. Let me put it the other way, Wally. Let me try and maybe paint a picture in another context. Is that Killian O'Connor? I'm just trying to think back the amount of league football that Killian O'Connor has played over the last few years. There's a reason for that. It's because he's picked up loads of various niggles. And actually, there's been more than various niggles. There have been fairly serious injuries. And now it hasn't affected his championship time an awful lot, but he has missed an awful lot of time for Mayo. So I would imagine that the context here is that Killian O'Connor might well have wanted to play against Tyrone, but Dame Thorn is looking at, well, he has, you know, he has Leitrim next weekend, and he has Roscommon the following weekend, and then if that goes to plan, there's a Connacht final after that. So he's probably thinking of preservation for Killian O'Connor. And to be honest, that maybe paints a picture of how they were going into, you know, how seriously James Thorne treated last week against Tyrone. Obviously, they, you know, Mayo wanted to stay up. They were the longest serving team in the division, but he wasn't prepared to risk somebody who was, I think it was probably more James Thorne's decision than Killian O'Connor's decision. And yeah, he wasn't prepared to risk Killian O'Connor because he wants to preserve him for the long run, because as we just said, one game in the championship and he's gone. So wants him to be in as good a shape as possible. So in conclusion, Killian O'Connor is not soft, really.
In conclusion, you're getting very defensive about a bit of a joke. Anyways, listen, we'll move on from that, because usually I don't talk about analysis in part one, but we've so much to get through, and we've Davy Burke interview coming up in part two. We'll kick it off with Donegal and Tyrone here. And like, I mean, it's interesting that Donegal are going for three in a row here, Kieran. This hasn't been done since Armagh did it from 04 to 06, team you were involved with. And before that, I think it was the 1960s. Like, it shouldn't be underestimated what Donegal are attempting to do here.
Yeah, look, you know, it's a great achievement that they're going for. As you said, Armagh was the last team to capture that thing. You know, so obviously they'll have their eyes set on that target as well, to try and replicate what Armagh did in the noughties. And no better place to start that in Ballybuffet on Sunday against their old rivals, Tyrone.
Yeah, well, I keep this one here with you, because this is an interesting question, and it's just very, very hard to answer. Will the Tyrone team against Donegal in the league 2 weeks ago show up, or will the more high-pressing Tyrone team we saw against Mayo? I know there was a strong wind involved that day, but will we see Tyrone going for that kind of an approach?
I think it's going to be cagey, Wally. You know, I think we know what way both teams are set up. Donegal will have a defensive template in place, and you know, I'm thinking Tyrone will do the same. They won't play with the freedom that they had last week against Mayo, and I think part of that was that Mayo allowed them to play football. And you lead into Ballybuffet on Sunday afternoon. Donegal is not going to give Tyrone forwards that space. And it's going to be a cagey game, I think, that we've seen 2 weeks ago in the league.
Right. But even from kickouts, there would be the opportunity, you know, before the team retreats back, to potentially get that, you know, one-on-one situation. The point I'm making is more Tyrone pressed up so high against Mayo, whereas against Donegal, they backed off them and waited for them. And can Tyrone beat Donegal in a game like that, where Donegal are just so comfortable playing around the outside of that kind of system?
Yeah, look, you know, it's there's going to be cases in the game where they're going to have to press kickouts, you know, and then they're going to have to drop off. And I think that'll be by line of decision-making but on the pitch, because, you know, we know how good Sean Patton is in his kickouts and can really hurt you. Donegal can really hurt you from them restarts. If Tyrone's drop off and allow Donegal, as you said, to play out around the outskirts, you know, I think Donegal picked them off handy enough on Sunday, even if they allow that to happen, where I think if they get a higher press and put the Donegal defence on the pressure coming out with the ball, you know, there's opportunities that they will get joy from that on Sunday afternoon. But, yeah, you know, it's their decision-making on that pitch, when to do that and when not to do it.
The thing about Donegal, Connor, is that they seem so comfortable. I've made this point on the show before. Even Donegal club football, like, I mean, they'll defend in numbers, but they'll slow their attack down so much that they'll get their forwards back up in position. Do you know what I mean? And then they're playing around the outside with their forwards all back in position, and everyone kind of pairs off, and then they'll be able to give in a kick pass or two when the time is right. Now, my point is, for Tyrone, why on earth would you stand off Donegal, allow them play around the outside, find a gap? Because they'll do it. That's the football that's played in Donegal. They have to surely be out in players' faces, putting pressure on that ball and making sure Donegal don't have that easy time to relax on the ball, play it over and back.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be some sort of a hybrid maybe between what they did against Donegal the first day and then trying to press the way they did against Mayo. The thing is, and Kieran made a point there, the thing is, like, Tyrone went after David Clark kick out, and like Kerry showed in the Super 8s last year that if you go after David Clark's kick out, you can have huge success because he doesn't have a ping on him. He's a looping kick out. He tends to go short. If you put a lot of pressure on, as Tyrone did, you can get a lot of success, as they did, especially with Conor McKenna's goal in the second half. So like, the danger there is, and like, I'm just thinking back to the game last year, albeit in completely different conditions between Donegal and Tyrone, that Sean Patton, like, Donegal had so much joy on the kickouts, especially with Patton. And the danger is, if you press up so high, depending on what the wind is going to be like Sunday, that he can just kick over you. Yeah. You know, or he can nearly render the press irrelevant, depending on the conditions, obviously. And then, of course, like, Donegal might want to go long then because they'll have so much height around the middle. So it's the catch 22. It's trying to get that balance right between, like, how much do you press high, you know, and how much do you sit back and try and frustrate Donegal. But like, Donegal are the worst team, you know, maybe like with Dublin, who've become so used to playing against systems like that, because they can be so patient, as he said, because they're so used to it and they nearly have it down to a fine art at this stage. So I don't know, like, my inclination with Tyrone and with Mickey Hart is that although they had success against Mayo, I think he'll realise that Donegal are a completely different team. And I think, as Kieran said, I think it's going to be cagey. And I would say that they're going to be more naturally conservative than they were against Mayo on Sunday.
Yeah, well, I suppose, like, I mean, the way I would look at it, it would be, Kieran, like, I mean, how do you balance the risk versus the reward? The reward of pressing high and the odd mistake, like Conor McKenna was able to score a goal off a bad kick out because of a press, versus what you potentially could give up. I completely take the point. Patton could go long. He's a boomer of a kick out. You know, how can we avoid that flick on and maybe have somebody, a wing forward, you know, sweeping in around to make sure that doesn't happen? The risk reward has to be balanced up. Now, I know these two teams are kind of, they'd be more on the conservative end tactically.
Yeah, you know, it boils down to that risk and reward, as you said, Willie, like, you know, and what are the pros and cons of that? Will Sean Patton do what David Clark did at the weekend and cough up them short kickouts to give Tyrone opportunity to score goals? I don't think so. And if Tyrone go for that full court press on the kickouts, you know, with the way the Donegal team is organised and the structure that they have for set kickouts and the pace they have coming from that middle third, oh, I just believe Tyrone will be asking for trouble if they take that risk on Sunday afternoon.
Right, okay. Like, I mean, there's no doubt Donegal have loads of targets for the kickouts. There's a big kind of contrast in the size of both teams. Like, I mean, Tyrone do not have big players. Now, in fairness, even back in the days when they were winning All-Irelands, they never had huge teams, especially around the middle. But other than Brian Kennedy, they have very little height around that area.
Yeah, look, but, you know, you had Conor Gormley, you had Ricey, you had these boys plugging holes in the centre of defence, and, you know, and you very often you got to run through that centre of defence when them boys were about, you know, they either stopped, overturned you, or else, worst case scenario, they give a free away. But at the present minute, you know, I don't think Tyrone have that calibre player in their centre of defence that has the ability to stop that running power that Donegal will pose problems with on Sunday afternoon.
Right. So your advice then, what would your advice for Tyrone be for the kickouts then? The high press is too risky because of Patton's long kickout. Like, I mean, if they drop off, you're looking at Donegal having, well, even if they don't drop off, you're looking at Donegal having Michael Murphy as a target, Jason McGee as a target, McFadden as a target, Langan as a target, Thompson as a target. Donegal, there is no other way of painting this. From kickouts, Donegal have a huge advantage.
Yeah, look, I think you got to mix and match it. You know, I think every opportunity you have of a scoreable free kick, I think you've got to go and press hard on the keeper, because that allows you 20, 30, 45 seconds to get organised and get everybody in place.
Yeah.
You know, where on the flip side of that, if you score from open play or kick away from open play, you might not have the bodies up the pitch to get that press on you want. So I think they got to go with the approach and Sunday of a mix and match that, you know, every opportunity to get a scoreable free kick, you know, I would take the risk and press Patton's kickouts, but being on the cautious side of that, he's looking that ball over the top and making sure everybody knows their roles and filtering in once that ball travels long to either win the ball, and if they don't win it, then just stop the game and stop the momentum that Donegal is trying to create from their kickouts.
Yeah, one thing, Conor, that Tyrone always used to have back in the day when they were winning All Irelands is that they were brilliant on the breaking ball. Like, I mean, they were very, very tenacious. They get in on top of it, they'd break it. They wouldn't have fetchers like Daryl O'Shea, for example, but they were very, very determined, wiry, and they'd be down on breaks. The problem is now there isn't really the same breaking ball in the game because, like I said, Donegal are going to target Murphy maybe on a wing, Langan on another wing, Thompson somewhere else, somewhere. So you can't get those bodies around that breaking ball area that you used to.
Yeah, yeah, and then that's the thing when you point out the targets, like it's all very well and good saying you're going to get two and three men around Michael Murphy, but you can't have two or three men around Michael Murphy, Kieran Thompson, Michael Langan, Jason McGee. Do you know, and they're all going to be stationed at different parts of the pitch for Sean Paton to kick it out with. So it's very difficult to spoil. It's going to be very difficult for Tyrone to spoil that. And as well as that, not that the Donegal lads don't always look to catch it clean either. You know, the famous one is the Michael Murphy tap down to Ryan McKean.
They do that well.
The team still haven't figured out about two or three years on. So it's probably going to be the key, to be honest. I agree with Kieran. Like you can't just let them have it all the time. You probably have to pick and choose your moments to press, and the time to do that would be, you know, when you have set plays. But they're definitely not going to do it all the time. So it's just the more I look at the personnel around there, I fear for Tyrone, because primary possession is going to be key on Sunday. The more Donegal have it, the more they'll hold on to it and frustrate Tyrone. And I just, especially when I look at that kind of middle eight area and the personnel that Donegal are going to have there, I just think they're going to have a huge advantage no matter what happens with the kickouts.
Yeah, no, and that's true. And like we know that the aggressive press against Mayo in the first half, when that long ball over the top just was not an option for Clark, because you know what I mean? He was against the Gale Force wind. So that risk wasn't there. Who's going to mark Michael Murphy, Kieran? Because, like, I mean, Hamsey has done it in the past and done all right. He looks like he's out for the weekend. Rory Brennan then was the go-to man. He's suspended. Like, I mean, is it a case where they need to have somebody following Michael Murphy all the time, or could they say, right, McNamee picks him up if he goes inside, and if he goes out around midfield, why not put Matty Donnelly on him? And actually, instead of Michael Murphy, you know, going where he wants and having someone shadowing him, and Michael Murphy's going to win primary ball no matter who's marking him because he's such a big, you know, monster of a man, why not say to Matty Donnelly, you go forward at every opportunity and, you know, Michael Murphy's not going to want to actually follow you?
Yeah, look, you know, it's going to be a key moment in the game as to who Mickey picks to track Murphy, you know. And I think Michael is smart enough that if they put Matty Donnelly on him, you know, Michael won't waste energy in tracking Matty Donnelly back. He'll pass that baton on to somebody else and get someone else in that middle third to tag him.
Right.
You know, I would, you know, preferably, I would put Ronan McNamee on him and tell him to tag him wherever he goes. Ronan's a great player, a great man marker. He's aggressive. He's aggressive in the air. He's aggressive on the ground. And I think he could be a perfect match for Murphy on Sunday, because this is an area where Tyrone have struggled in the past, is trying to curtail Michael's influence on the game. And if Michael has a big influence on the game on Sunday, there's only going to be one winner.
Yeah, McNamee, I suppose, is so safe inside there. You'd be leaving Hugh Pat McGeary and young Rafferty inside probably on Brennan and maybe McBrearty. McBrearty could be back, or else it'd be Oisin Gallen.
Yeah, no, you know, it's just a possibility where, you know, I would, you know, if you can influence Michael Murphy out around the middle, that will solve a lot of problems of the ball going inside to the other three boys that we mentioned there.
Yeah, no, well, that's it. And I suppose both teams will try and get players back. Amazingly, Mayo didn't really play a sweeper last week, Conor, and that allowed, you know, Tyrone give that ball over the top because the cornerbacks were marking from the front, covering ball that potentially a sweeper would have covered. I think both Tyrone and Donegal will be getting somebody back. It might not be a full-time sweeper, but it'll be somebody who's dropping back immediately to cover off that ball out in front, where the two cornerbacks can then mark from behind. You probably won't see Conor McKenna type passes, you know, that we saw against Mayo this Sunday.
You absolutely won't. Like in many ways, like Mayo was the worst opposition that Tyrone could have played. Honestly, because I know it's only a couple of games in the league, but like from what I've seen, James Horan's nearly decided to just go back to the template from 2012, where it's like, you know, it's full court press, it's everyone go forward and like leave no protection for the full back line whatsoever. And they did that against the Gale Force Breeze, you know, making like Conor McKenna was absolutely fantastic last week, but like it's brilliant when you have 60 yards of open space to kick a pass into Derek Anavin and he can get a goal from there. So I don't think Tyrone are stupid enough that they'll realize that that just isn't going to be the case. That just isn't going to be the case the next year. They're just not going to get that space. And just back to what you were saying there about Michael Murphy, like I'm not sure about the idea of saying that like when he goes into the full forward line, somebody takes him, and when he goes out around midfield, somebody takes him, because then it's hard to like what is the trigger for somebody. You know, there probably is a trigger that can work, but it might cause a bit of confusion. Whereas some people, you're meant to have him there.
Yeah, when Michael Murphy figures that out, he might hang around halfway between the two of them.
I agree with the idea of having tagged. I would worry about Ronan McNamee doing it, because I think he's the most solid presence that Tyrone have in there. And I think that, like, you know, I think Declan Bonner might even tempt Tyrone into doing something like that, so that Oisin Gallen and Jamie Brennan are left inside against two more inexperienced cornerbacks than Ronan McNamee in there. But again, it's an issue that, like, Tyrone have had this issue every year. And have they ever properly addressed it? Maybe since going back when they were beating Tyrone back in 2015, 2016, or Donegal back in 2015, 2016, I'm not sure. But the problem is that like you can take out Michael Murphy, he still is the key man. But then if you place too much emphasis on that, then Donegal have so much quality in attack that you don't want to place too much emphasis on that. But I think he'll be tagged. I don't think it'll be Ronan McNamee, but we'll wait and see.
While we're on the subject of tagging the kind of talisman, who's going to take on Conor McKenna, Kieran?
I think my old mate McGee will be licking his lips up in Greedo. obviously Conor McKenna has been brilliant in the last two matches for coming back from Australia, you know. But I think this is an opportunity where I think Bonner will go with McGee on him. And I know Neil personally, and I know Neil he'll relish this opportunity, and he would have been teasing things out in the last meeting in the league match, trying to get his burns of what he likes and what he doesn't like. And I think it's a battle that I'd really like to see, and hopefully Declan Bonner goes with it.
Yeah, no, he will, but like Neil McGee then as well. It's a bit like McNamee. Neil McGee is his go-to marker in the full back line as well. And I suppose Stephen McManaman is taking on that role a little bit more now as well.
Yeah, look, you have Stephen McManaman in there. You have Owen Bourne Gallagher, like, you know, that, you know, he'll pose a more threat going forward. Like, you know, it's probably just getting him. It's key to get the matchups right there, because by the looks of things, you're going to have Peter Hart in there. You're going to have Conor McKenna. Will Mickey Hart be brave enough and go with young Darragh Canavan inside with them? That's to be seen yet. And you have Darren McCurry floating around the outskirts. So it's trying to get that balance right of, you know, Owen Bourne Gallagher might suit Darren McCurry better. You know, and I think Lee McGee would suit Conor McKenna better than the other players that we've mentioned there.
I think one matchup that will probably happen is Conor Myler will take up Ryan McHugh. Conor, like, I mean, he seems to be the kind of go-to. He picks up Kieran Kilkenny. He's picked up Fenton actually in the past. Like, I mean, yeah. he's given that. He does it. We know he doesn't play in the forwards. He's given that kind of a role where he has to just follow somebody around.
Yeah, I think so. And then, like, just thinking back to even last year, like not to be mentioned Mayo all the time, but like Mayo targeted Michael Murphy with Lee Keegan, and they put Paddy Jerkin on Ryan McHugh, and it was probably the best job I've seen anyone do on Ryan McHugh in the last few years. And then he went on to do it on Jack McCaffrey as well. So there is a template there. Conor Myler has shown he's kind of as you said, he's the go-to. He's marked all sorts. And I think after Murphy, when Mickey Hart is thinking of fellas that need to be marked, he's going to be next in line. So he seems tailor-made. Like Conor Myler is versatile enough that he's comfortable with all ends of the pitch and won't mind the, you know, will have the fitness to keep up with Ryan McHugh as well. So that looks set in stone as well. And probably the second biggest battle to look after if Conor McKenna is going to take, or Neil McGee is going to take Conor McKenna, because that'll be box office.
Yeah, exactly right, lads. We'll finish up here in part one with predictions. I'll start with you, Kieran.
I think in a cagey affair, I think Donegal will pick them off and win with 4 or 5 to spur.
Ooh, Conor?
Not quite 4 or 5, but I think Donegal will have it. I just think, as I said earlier on, I think they're too strong around the middle, and I think they'll get enough possession of the ball, to frustrate Tyrone and win with 2 or 3 points to spare, maybe not 4 or 5.
Yeah, I'd agree with that as well. I think it's very hard to see past the Donegal win. They've too much firepower, they've too much height and strength around the middle, and they've got probably better, more physical defenders as well. Like, it is hard to see, and they've a better, much bigger advantage from kickouts as well. So it is hard to see past Donegal if their attitude is right. And I think Tyrone, one of their starting players, has, we don't know who that is yet, might miss the game because of a positive test for COVID. So, like, I mean, it is hard to look past Donegal here. But look, stranger things have happened. Tyrone were favourites, I'm pretty sure, last year, and Donegal completely shocked them. Anyways, listen, lads, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with Davy Burke.
Kamir, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want
no one minute, man. So after two great results, hammering Antrim at home and beating Wexford away, Wicklow footballers are promoted to Division 3, and their manager Davy Burke joins us on the line now. How's it going, Davy?
Well, now, Callum.
A busy week, I would imagine, trying to get the lads' bodies right and heading back into the Lions Den, the exact same venue, the exact same team for the Championship next week.
Yeah, very busy week, yeah. We would have picked up a few knocks and niggles last Saturday there in the promotion game down at Wexford Park. So our priority this week is to get the bodies right and to freshen lads back up and try get the heads back right, because you just never know. Obviously, we would have secured promotion, and you know what was that lad's priority. You just never know where they will be coming into a championship week. So our job as management is obviously try narrow the focus again, you know.
Right. So, like, I mean, talking about priorities, I was commenting on Monday's show that out of all the highlights we saw last Sunday night, the Wicklow footballers clearly celebrated that promotion on the pitch. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that either. They showed a bit of emotion. Like, that clearly was a priority for you this year, Davy.
Absolutely, yeah. It's since 2012 is the last time Wicklow would have got out of Division 4, you know. So, clearly a priority. And we've no problem saying that, Tom. We are where we are. We know where we are. We're really... We're working hard to improve it. We're working hard to find a level of consistency. For me, it's the biggest thing since I came into Division 4. There was huge spikes. We were brilliant today. We were brutal tomorrow, you know, and it's no good to us. So I'd much prefer find a level of 6 or 7, or 7.5 out of 10 would do me. You know, I kind of find a decent level, play at it every week, and we're guaranteed, you know, where we'll be then. Whereas this up and down crack and inconsistency, I just couldn't get my head around it. So I think we might have sorted that slightly, and we find it at a reasonable level of form now, you know?
Yeah, you seem to be in great form since we came back. Like, I mean, you stuck 7 past Antrim. I don't know, was that a freak result, or are you working on goals? I believe you have them playing a direct style from the match report, whatever that means.
Yeah, whatever that means is right, yeah. Now, we do play a direct style, but the Antrim results, to be honest with you, getting the 2 points was no surprise. You know, we were fairly confident going into the game that we were right. We prepared well, so the result was no surprise at all. Look, obviously the manner of it, maybe Andrew didn't have as much work done as we had, or you just don't know in these strange times. But to be honest with you, anyone who comes to Ockham, Colin, will get the fill of it. So we wouldn't mind anyone coming down your road, you know.
Yeah, well, historically, you don't have to tell me, being from Laois. We all remember the Battle of Ockham. But come here, like, I mean, talk to us about the direct style. Is that like a direct kicking style then? Like, I mean, the reporter I was reading didn't really elaborate on it.
Yeah, well, look, we'd be very much, we'd have a couple of target men, like in Shawnee Furlong there would be one of the best target men in Division 4 and a long time at it. And, you know, if you put any sort of a ball 50-50 into Shawnee, he generally would either come out with it or might break at your side, you know. So he's a very, very dangerous player there. And we like to use it. Look, in all my teams, if you go back through them all, I promote foot passing. I promote 30-35 metre foot passing. And to be honest with you, Colin, I don't promote too much further than that, because most lads can't kick it accurate enough further than that, you know. So, and that's the truth of it. So I'd be a big promoter and big push of kick passing. We'd work on it, particularly on the diagonal balls and everything, you know. And look, you can talk about it, and opposition managers can say, okay, they're working on the diagonal ball, but it's easier said than done to stop it, you know.
No, it is. Well, obviously the sweeper covers the obvious ball, and the diagonal cut, you know, kind of tricks him out.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So the dink ball in front of the 14 or whatever, the sweeper's generally in place to stop that ball, you know. But then if you use a diagonal ball, you can take both defenders out, and if your full forward wins it and turns, it's a goal, you know. So look, now don't get me wrong, we use that as one of our weapons, you know, and hopefully, and there's good young lads there coming off, Johnny, the likes of Owen Darcy, Conor Byrne, and, you know, Gerald Murphy are dangerous, enough young guys there too who kind of complement each other, you know.
Yeah, so like, I mean, Wicklow, like, there's a bit of talent coming through in Wicklow. We know their minors made headlines. Was it 2 years ago, 2018? Like, I mean, I see Owen Darcy has been promoted off that team. Like, you know, it's probably people look at Wicklow in Division 4 and don't really think maybe, you know, you're getting maybe 5, 6, 7 very high quality players coming through.
Absolutely, it's huge. And look, and to be honest with you, this is just a coincidence that I ended up landing in at the same time, and it's brilliant. It's worked out a treat, to be honest. So, there's some really, really high quality, like the likes of even someone you didn't mention there, and Paddy O'Kane, when it came through that minor team with Owen Darcy. And to be honest, Conor, there's very few cornerbacks as good as him out there, particularly 19, 20-year-olds. I would have a good future on my hands, and very few would be as good as Paddy O'Kane would be. So again, it's another player who's coming through with the right attitude, just willingness to work, and you give him any job. No job's too big or too small for Paddy. So that's another guy, you know. So, we really do have a group of good guys coming through, really good youth. Because I think, to be honest with you, it probably went a bit stale. I think, you know, when I came in at the start of the year, a really genuine guy would have said to me, there's not a huge amount of competition. When I said to him straight up when I met him for a cup of tea in November last year, well, I can guarantee I'll find competition from somewhere. Because, and he didn't mean that in any way that he was being arrogant or any way that he was, you know, he was just saying, I know I'm going to start in this position. And it's not because for any other reason other than there's nothing behind me. You know that kind of way. So I had to make it my business then to make sure that fella, you know, was pushed on a small bit. You know, and look, he lost his position, but ultimately he's back in that position now and he's absolutely flying purely because every night of training he has to look over his shoulder now, you know.
Right. Okay, maybe he regretted being so honest with you in the cup of tea.
yeah.
Come here, just on that point then. So John Evans brought in Oisin Manning and David Devereaux from Dublin. I was reading an interview from Dublin Clubs, and I was reading an interview with you saying you were open to that, and then I was thinking, do you have to get the balance right there? Because if you start bringing in two or three more fellas, I don't think you did, but that might turn off these young fellas going, ah, Jesus, you know, where's our chance going to come from?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be very, very careful. And to be honest, it's more about the personalities. It's more about the character. You know, we're not going recruiting any superstar dubs here, you know. Ultimately, they'll play for Dublin if they want, you know. So it's not a case of that. Whereas the likes of Oisin and Dave now would be serious fellas. Good football men, really good characters in the group. A small bit older, which, you know, we'd be a young group. So they're good guys to guide the lads and look after the lads as well. To be honest, it's purely about the character. If you come in and you're willing to put your shoulder to the wheel, I don't think anybody in Wicklow will mind who you are, where you're from, or, you know, what the story is. It's, if guys come in thinking, I'm from X county and I'm going to do my own thing here, well, that'll put people off, and we wouldn't be standing for that anyway, you know. So to be honest, with the two lads in particular that are in, they're really, really good fellas, and they're really making a big impact for us. So there's no issue there, you know.
Yeah, I knew you were young, right? Because I didn't realise you were 31. You're making me feel very old. Like, I mean, you've won an All-Ireland under 20 with Kildare. You've won a county title with Sarsfields, and now you've got promotion. You're only 31. Like, I mean, you should still be playing. What's going on here?
Yeah, I'm actually 32, just to correct the record there. To be honest, I would have started very young. I was a player, and I would have done my cruciate early, Colin, very early. And it was back in the day when they x-rayed me, so I would have done my knee in training one night, and they x-rayed me instead of scanning me. It was that long ago. So, and they would have put me in a cast, etc., etc. Sure, the first night back out in the cast, I wrecked the whole cruciate, ACL, MCL, the whole lot. I ended up with a plastic kneecap now. So that's really why, when I was 15 or 16, it was ball burst for me, you know. To be honest with you, Colin, I don't think I was ever going to make any headlines as a player anyway. So I don't think I'm any great loss to Kildare or to anybody now, to be honest. So I just got straight into it. Went straight away into the underage in the club. In fairness to my club, the senior ladies took a chance on me. I was only 18 years of age. They took a chance on me, and we went on with decent success for them, and kind of just kicked on from there, you know. But it was something in my house. Like, my parents were the chair people of our local club. You couldn't get away from it, you know. You were just involved, you know, that kind of way.
Right. Okay. And like, I mean, then the path then to the Kildare under 20s just came from the, you know, the success with the ladies.
No, so in between there, I managed my home club. I would have managed a good few teams, but in between Confi Senior Footballers, which is my home club, and Confi GA man in Kildare there, and I would have taken on the senior job. Sorry, where did I go first? Dublin Senior Ladies came on first, Colin, 2014.
Right.
Dublin Senior Ladies, I went in as assistant manager with Craig McGonigal there for 2 years. We had a decent run. We won two under-21 All-Irelands, but we were beaten in two senior finals by probably the best team of all time, that Cork team. particularly the 2014 one, which is sticking us now. We're 10 points up with about 8 or 9 minutes to go. And we're done by a point there. So that one still lives long in my memory. And you'll see me in the sideline. My teams could be 10 points up today with 2 minutes in the injury time. And I'll never let up anymore. I'll never, ever let up, because that day just sickens me. But anyway, so moved on from there after 2 years. I went back to my home senior men's club, Conflu. Decent run with them as well. We won Division 1 for the first time ever in Kildare, which decent enough achievement considering the Newbridge clubs, the Atties, the Selbridges. So for a club like Conflu, which is a small rural parish, to win Division 1 was fair going, you know. And we also got the senior semi-final that year and were pipped by Sarsfield. So we had a good run for them couple of years with them. And after that, we moved into Kildare and touching. I moved into the under-20s there. And yeah, we had a decent enough run with them guys, all right.
Yeah, were you in the mix for the Kildare senior job around the time of Jack O'Connor as well?
Well, yeah, I think I was. Yeah, I presume I was. Look, they didn't. They didn't. I think when Jack became available, I think their search ended, you know. So, right. I'd say I was in around the mix, all right. But, yeah, once Jack became available, I think he trumped all the rest of us, to be honest.
So where did you learn who did you get, you know, a lot of the management kind of tips from, and who did you learn your trade from? Because, I suppose if I was thinking if I went into management, it would be managers I played under. Your career was cut so short, you know. Yeah. Is it more managers you worked with that you got the kind of inspiration from?
No, it would have been my father. My father, actually, he passed away a long time. He would have been about 15 or 16 years ago. But I would have picked it all up off him through business and through football. He would have been a very, very successful manager in his own right. He would have managed, he's a teacher by trade, but he would have managed St. David's and Artane, would have had Stephen Cookson, Stephen McPhail. He would have had a lot of top footballers, Davern from Kilmacud Crokes through his hands. He would have had huge, huge footballers through his hands out there himself, and Brian Talty, Brian Ladden, etc. would have been. So Kimbrough would have been in the mix with all them, and so I would have learned a huge amount off that. So to be honest, I was at every sideline in the country and every game in the country with him, and I just picked up bits and pieces over the years. And if you were to meet anyone who played under me, I think the sidelines are similarly ran now as they were back then, you know. So I think that's where a lot of it came from, to be honest.
Yeah, and a great thing without a crowd there, they can all hear you now as well.
Yeah, and I'm not the quietest, unfortunately. So, look, it is what it is, I suppose.
Kamir, you were saying, I was reading that you were saying you don't need a magic wand. Positivity is an excellent tool. And you said if they keep getting told you're not good enough and you're brutal, you're going to be brutal, aren't you? I'd be telling them the opposite and working them hard behind the scenes. And I can kind of tell from talking to you that you would be an infectious kind of character and a positive character. And I don't want to give you a big head, but that's probably Mikko Dwyer's biggest attribute as a manager, I found, was his positivity and how he could build players up.
Yeah, and the key thing, positivity is everything. Now, it's not blind positivity.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we're not, you know, there's nothing worse. These guys are intelligent. Young men are intelligent men who've played a long, long time. I can't go into a dressing room to Darren Hayden or to Dean Healy or to Shawnee Furlong and be, you know, blowing things up when they're not real, because they'll laugh me out. They'll get rid of me straight away. So if something is positive, let them know. If they're working hard, let them know. If there's good young guys coming through, let them know. You know, when I've managed in underage until there, I've managed here and there, I've seen the good lads. These are equally as good, equally as positive, equally as, you know, exciting to work with. So why not share that? I just believe positivity is everything, and don't get me wrong, there's times, Colin, when I have to let fly, and I do let fly, but I do believe the lads appreciate you more, because if 90% of the time you're backing them, it's just the odd time when you have to let loose or whatever it is, then they might say, okay, he's right there, we need to actually tune into this, or whatever it might be, you know. So but being upbeat, being energetic, I think it's the only way to go, because you know, there's enough of us. Why do we all do this football? Why do we travel hours per night? Why do we do it? Surely we do it because we love it. I don't sit in that M11 every night at Bray in traffic going nowhere, be going to Wicklow for anything else other than the enjoyment of it and the fact I know I'm going down to a really good team who are mad for information, mad for, you know, just mad for progression, you know. And that's, so why not be positive? We've all had shit days and works, we've all had whatever, but when we get on the field, that hour, whatever we do in the field, just clears everything. You're hugely positive afterwards, and then you move on, you know. And a team like Wicklow, I've been beaten down and beaten down and beaten down and told they're this and told they're that. And if you're told you're no good at broadcasting, sure, you're going to think you're no good at it. You know,
yeah,
that kind of way.
I am. I'm told that plenty of times. Don't worry.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, it's the same thing in my line of work. If you're told you're no good, and you'll start seeping in, doubts will start seeping in. Whereas I believe lads, if we prepare like X, if we do this night after night, find our level of consistency, as I said, right, then let teams come break us down. Then you'll figure out, Jesus, this actually isn't too bad here. This is positive. We are making ground here. And then they start believing it. As I said, it can't be blind. But once I think work, once the work and the level of preparation is there and the positivity is there, lads want to be with you, Colin. You know what I mean? They want to, because you often hear in Wicklow, oh, they can never get the best team out. And you probably hear this everywhere, really.
Yeah.
You know, they can't get the best 15 out. There's not one player in Wicklow we want at the minute. Not one player we want we don't have. So I think that's a fair reflection on the guys that are they're mad to come in and they're you know, whereas say in November, December time last year, Colin, I would have made calls, obviously, like you would. And it would have been a bit of, oh, I'm in DCU on a Tuesday, I'm not sure, oh, I'll come back to you. And at that stage, we were like, okay, come back to me. Whereas now I made a few calls, and it's very much a case of, Jesus, when we starting? You know, that kind of way. So it's come full circle now, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, I suppose the word has got out that it's a happy panel and people maybe want to, you know, get in the mix on it.
Yeah.
So you've no problem with the positivity this week now after getting promoted, winning away against Wexford. A very, very weird situation for a young manager is, I'm sure you haven't done it before, because I wouldn't say many managers have ever done it before, is beat a team in the league away in a promotion match and then have to go down to their exact ground the very week later and play them in a knockout championship match.
Yeah, it's really unusual. It's seriously unusual. The only big upside to it is it's only one video analysis session, in that we are both, our review is their review. So your opposition analysis is the same as your own review. So look, it means we only have to do 10 minutes instead of doing 20. And you know yourself, there's nothing worse than boring old video sessions. You want to just get out in the field or whatever you're doing. So so look, that's one positive out of it. Yeah, it's a very, very unique situation. I've never had to manage in a situation like this before. But again, I'm learning, and you know, I'll get a good bit out of this week as well. But look, our main focus is recover the bodies, get them right. We did pick up a few knocks and niggles the other day, as would be expected in a fairly physical game. But they'll be all right. We'll get them right, get back out onto the field. But the way I'm viewing it, Colin, is like very, very simple. And I got a good bit of experience off this last year. I'm kind of viewing it like a county final replay, to be honest with you. So in other words, that's what I'm doing. Now, look, I would have had this very case last year in the Newbridge final clash with Morphy last year. And we drew the first day and we came out the right side the second day. I believe who learns more, and also, to be honest with you, who has the key change to make? I think you need a change. I don't think the same 215 are gonna take each other on. I don't think they should take each other on. I think there's a key change needed, and we have one lined up, I hope. And I think that generally is a curveball that's needed for the second day. The same 215s can't just go at it again, you know. So I think that's what's needed for this weekend.
Well, that's important. That's one thing I always, with Dublin in replays, Jim Gavin always maybe changes something the next day, you know. And for some, but the one thing about the match last week, the conditions were so bloody terrible that surely they won't be as bad this week, and it might be a different type of game anyways. Would that be fair?
Yeah, you'd be hoping. Geez, the sunny southeast wasn't very good last week. I came off the field and only when I was on the bus, whatever it was, after looking at the scores, and I seen 117 and 120 being kicked around the country. I was like, Jesus Christ, were we terrible or what? And then I was talking to some of the guys in Newbridge, and beautiful day in Newbridge. Not an ounce of wind or rain. So then it kind of made sense to me. We were all right. 13 points, we were happy enough after. Literally, it was a monsoon, and I was only talking to people, and they were saying, geez, we thought you were in trouble at halftime. You had a big win, but you were only within 2 points up. And but the rain was so bad in a cross field that the wind had no impact on the game whatsoever. Right. The wind was irrelevant. So I might have looked from home that, geez, we're only a couple of points up and have a decent win with them. To be honest with you, the wind made no bearing at all in the game, you know. So hopefully this weekend we got a drier day. We want to play football, as I'm sure Wexford do too. You know, we'd love to, as you've seen, we did rack up a bit of a score against Antrim. We want to score. Like I was told, Colin, Wicklow can't score. My kitman, one of the first things he told me is we struggle to score 11 or 12 points every game. I'm kitman for the last 7 or 8 years here, you know. So I said, well let's sort that out, you know, that kind of way. So every team can score, there's players everywhere, you know. It's just maybe are they, do they know what they have to do, or you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, the messaging wasn't there. Well, come here, I'm looking forward to seeing what this surprise you have in store for the weekend or the weekend is, Davey. Thanks very much for taking the call, I appreciate it.
Cheers, Colin. Thank you.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to you. And then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on. Darling, I will be loving you
till we're 70. All right, lads, predictions here, because we know it's a bumper weekend. There's loads of championship matches, so we want to run down through these, and we'll start with Derry Armagh. Very interesting game. I suppose we're wondering how Tyrone are going to set up here, Kieran. Like, I mean, I think it's fairly obvious how Derry are going to set up. Rory Gallagher's their manager. He's gotten joy from Armagh before, with Fermanagh, especially 2 years ago when they were, you know, massive underdogs. A kicking team like Armagh have tended to struggle against very, very defensive teams. So if we're wondering about how this game is going to pan out, I don't think we need to be, I think we can be very comfortable in saying Armagh are going to face a lot of bodies in front of them.
Yeah, look, you know, suppose you go back to 2 years ago when Fermanagh overturned Armagh and Brewster Park. You know, the talk going into this game was about the scoring power and the firepower that Armagh had within their squad. And, you know, and I think that they, you know, Armagh played into Fermanagh's hands and try to play that expansive brand of football, like kicking and going for the juggler, like, you know, and left massive gaps in behind. And every time from on a counter attack, they got in behind us. And, you know, I think the Armagh squad has learned a lot from that day. And, you know, and leading into this week, they know what they're going to face. And with Derry and Rory Gallagher in charge, you know, and we talked about the Donegal's Rome game being cagey. And I believe this game is going with the Armagh-Derry game be cagey also, like, because Armagh can sit back and keep things tight and play on a counter-attacking brand of football now as well. And if that does happen, I think Armagh's further down the line and athletic development ability that they can pose Derry's more problems playing that brand of football than being expansive on Sunday afternoon.
Well, that's it. There's certain games suit certain styles, and this isn't going to be it. And Rory Grugan, I think I mentioned on the show before, I was talking to him about this, and he was like, Armagh in the past were a little bit too eager to go with the kick pass, especially when they were blowing leads there for a while, you know, against Tipperary and different teams. And he's like, we need to just be able to close it out. And I suppose, realistically, Kieran, they just need to watch a video of how Donegal do it. Donegal, like, they almost slow the attack down to walking pace until all their team is back in position, because we know if you're playing a very defensive team, your forwards are all over the place chasing cornerbacks and fullbacks that are running up the field. So, like, I actually think Donegal have this system down to a fine art that, like, I mean, the idea that you win a kick out and you go rushing up the field while your forwards aren't in position, you know, you're in no man's land there. Whereas Donegal, you could see Ryan McHugh walking with the ball. And I suppose when he's walking with the ball, his forwards are jogging back down into position.
Yeah, and I think this has all come from the Dublin template. You know, you go back to 2-3 years ago, you know, you can see the Dublin players raising an arm in the middle of the pitch, and that means a reset. And that means that every player is getting in their position to try and counterattack or try and break down a blanket defence. And, you know, Donegal have added that to the game. And I know this year from watching Armagh and, you know, especially watching their last two matches, you know, they've been working on this and, you know, they're making calls around the middle of the pitch when the game becomes slow, and you can see players setting up along the sideline and occupying boys on top of the D, and, you know, and they're gearing themselves, you know, for Sunday, and they were trialing and airing these reset plays in the last two league matches. And, you know, and if you go watch back to the Roscommon and Clare matches, they got plenty of joy when this happened, you know. But on the flip side of that is, you know, whenever they get overturned, they've got to be really switched on and either stop the game or filter back and cover the full back line a wee bit quicker than they have done in the last two matches.
Yeah, like, I mean, when you think about it, they're almost the perfect tactics, Connor, in that you get to defend with lots of numbers, and then by the time it comes to your turn to attack, you have your, you know what I mean, you can pair off kind of one versus one.
Yeah, but you just have to have the patience for it. And as you said, you got Donegal have that down to a fine art. And some people can get a bit impulsive depending on the way the game is going. They might, you know, try a shot from a ridiculous angle, or you know, just try and, as you said, speed up the attack when the players aren't in position to do it. So, you know, just like you'd like to think at this stage, Kieran has mentioned it there, you know, through some hard lessons that Armagh have had to have, particularly in Ulster. And just kind of through the kind of development of their own game in the last few years, to come at it with a more sophisticated approach than they'll need it, because as I said, there has been a few occasions in the last few years when they've struggled against Bank of Defence, and even to be honest, there was signs against, I know it was the first lean game back, but there was signs of a little bit of impatience occasionally against Roscommon. And particularly, as Kieran said, what if Rory Gallagher was taking anthem from that game, I would say it was the way that kind of Roscommon broke in behind the defence, the Armagh defence a few times on the counter-attack, and got in for three goals and could have had more. So you'd like to think that the lessons are learned and they have a bit more patience. And unless Derry get into a huge lead in the first half or anything like that, I would say Armagh will be patient. They will go through the motions that they have to go through. And they should, you know, despite Rory Gallagher's record against Kieran McGeaney and the way he plays, you'd like to think this will be one that Armagh can get over the line on.
Yeah. What's the story with Charlotte Oak Burns, Kieran? Is he not able to make the team? Like, I was very impressed with him last summer. Oisin O'Neill seems to be the man in midfield now.
Yeah, Charlie Oak, had an exceptional summer last year, you know, but, you know, on Mert, that's gone. You know, you're entering the year, and to be fair to Oisin O'Neill, Oisin and Rian's probably good for each other. Oisin missed the bulk of last year through a bad ankle injury. He's seen his younger brother Rian shooting the lights out, and you know, when the two boys are competitive, that would have hurt Oisin personally, and that would have driven him on to really cement a spot in the Armagh team at the present minute. And you know, and the two boys can only be good for each other because they're pushing each other. And they're two big players for Armagh. And Oisin, to be fair, has cemented that and held that position from the start of the year. And even through lockdown, I know he's trained really hard to keep that edge ahead of everybody else in the Armagh squad to keep his place for whenever the thing opened up again.
Yeah, and what about Ryan Kennedy? Is he going to solve a full-back position?
Yeah, Ryan's steady. You know, he's aggressive, competing for the ball. You know, he's like every other defender. You know, he can be a wee bit too aggressive at times. Says me, Pat Kettle Black.
To cut you off there, and I have to say this to your face, because I said this on the show when you weren't here, that he did the old Armagh trick of coming down with the knees that G invented in around 2002, 2003, 2004. This was an Armagh invention, and I'll give you your right of reply.
it's hard to say it was an Armagh invention. Them things were happening long before Armagh started. Look back to videos in the 70s and 80s. It was worse than that. Ryan is steady. He wants to play there, and he doesn't mind. Like, if he's given the job of marking Shane McGuigan on Sunday afternoon, like as I said earlier, he'll relish that opportunity and prepare properly for it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It will be him pairs off against Shane McGuigan. He's their big scorer. Like, I mean, and I suppose, Connor, when you have a defensive game plan, you do need special forwards, because you need a forward that's going to be able to kick a score when it's maybe a 2-on-1 situation or someone coming back to double up. And Shane McGuigan's definitely somebody that falls into that category of a special forward.
Yeah. I was just like, I hadn't seen much of Derry in the last couple of games, so I was just kind of on to Conan about it. And he was saying that, like, Shane McGuigan, the way that Derry played, because they got so many men behind the ball, Shane McGuigan was still able to do a lot of work and still still was available as that outlet. And I think he might have got 4 points from play against Offaly as well. So, but that's the thing. Like, that Rory Gallagher template of the way that Derry is going to be playing, it's useless to them unless they have some marksmen in there like Shane McLaughlin or Niall Loughlin, I think, or maybe Angel Lynn might play a bit further back. But they're going to need these outballs on Sunday against Armagh, because there's no point in kind of getting so many men back behind the ball if you don't have anybody delivered to once you get it, or unless you get like loads of numbers forward of pace, which they might get from Kieran McFaul and Connor Glass in midfield. So yeah, Shane McGuigan, he'll be, I suppose, when Kieran McGeaney is doing his homework, he'll be the number one. So looks like Ryan Kennedy will be the man to stop him. So who would like that? But that battle will be crucial. But McGuigan will definitely take watching. That's for sure.
Yeah, Endelin is a good one to call out. He's got loads of pace, and he's a good link man to be able to link that kind of bodies behind the ball and carry it up at pace. You know, at speed, I suppose. Lads, we'll get a prediction on this one. I know where you're going, Kieran.
Yeah, look, you know, I've done a preview last night in this game with the sideline A. You know, it's going to be cagey. And I think Armagh will eventually pull away in the last 15 minutes. When the game opens out, they'll get to kick more ball. Watching Derry's last two matches, this is a period of the match where they're struggling to start the fatigue. Rory Gallagher probably hasn't got the opportunity to build that base for the type of football that he wants them to play. And I think going down the home straight, Armagh will pull away.
Anything about Celtic Park? What's your record like there?
We played them in 2010 in the Championship and come out winners. And I think we only ever played, maybe in 2014, we played them in a league match in it.
Right.
I'm not quite sure how that went, because remember, I done my ankle that night and I had to come off early. So I think maybe Derry pipped us.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, what about you, Conor? Like, I'm going for Armagh as well here. I think for pretty much the same reasons as Kieran. I think they have two similar reasons to Donegal, Tyrone. They have too much firepower for them, and coming down the home straight, surely that will count.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Not to just echo what the two of you said, but even just looking at like that the fellas that that Armagh were able to bring off the bench against Clare last week, you're talking about Jerry O'Burns, Conor Turbitt, I think who had started the week before and has been impressive at times. I think Stephen Campbell came off the bench as well. So between whoever they're going to start and between they're going to be able to bring on, and I don't think Derry have that impact off the bench, and that the effort that they're going to go to play the game plan that they're probably going to play. You know, that's gonna take a lot of energy. So I would imagine that, like, come the last 20 minutes, Armagh will pull away and probably could pull away comfortably to win by 5 or 6.
Right. Okay. Like, next one is Monaghan Cavan, lads, and I think this is a straightforward one as well. This is in Clonus. Obviously, Cavan won this one last year. They're missing, you're talking about Kieran Clark, Darren Moynihan, and Darren McVitie. You're looking at arguably their best defender, best midfielder, and best forward. So, like, I mean, they're not at full strength. They've been relegated. Monaghan have stayed in Division One for the 8th year in a row, which is incredibly impressive stat when you see Donegal struggling, you see Mayo struggling, you know, you see Kerry struggling for a few years. In Division One, they never do, and they're solid Championship performers. Maybe not so much last year, but, like, I mean, they have Banty in there now, and, you know, Conor McManus is flying. One thing that you'll be concerned with them, Kieran, is Conor McCarthy. Like, we thought he was going to develop into more of a centre half forward kind of role. He's played inside the last two games and been taken off in both of them, you know. So, like, I mean, again, you look at teams against Monaghan and you double mark Kieran McManus. I know it's not easy to do, but you're just looking for them, especially with Jack McCarron out for the year. You kind of want to see another forward put their hand up, Kieran.
Yeah, Conor McCarthy, we all know what he can pose. He's exciting when he's on ball, but, you know, playing him inside, I think he struggles to win his own ball. And that's probably part of the problem why he doesn't excel in there as much as he would when he's a wee bit looser out at number 11, where he can get his hands in the balls a wee bit more freer. Pick passes inside and then use his pace to get off the likes of McManus and then boys inside and create problems, you know. So that's something that maybe the Banty would have to think about, because Conor needs that help. You know, you'd imagine that Calvin would go about trying to shut down Manzi at the weekend, and they'd be thinking, if they have that done, they've an opportunity to go and win the game. But and if that happens, Monaghan will need to get scores from other players out around the pitch.
Yeah, Niall Kearns is out as well for Monaghan, who's a huge loss. You'd imagine you see the Hughes brothers in midfield. You'd prefer, like, if it was an ideal world, you'd have Kieran in the full forward line, but they might be forced to play him in midfield, Conor.
Yeah, yeah, and an ideal world, have him at 14 and Conor McCarthy at 11. You mentioned talking about Conor McCarthy there. He was absolutely brilliant before lockdown, and by all accounts, he was flying it for Scotland in the Championship as well.
Yeah. So.
I struggle to see why he's in at 14. Obviously, Banty has his reasons, but yeah, in an ideal world, you'd have Kieran Hughes at 14, him at 11. But yeah, I Monaghan haven't set the world alight through a meet at the weekend since they came back. But I know, like, they're like Cavan are in a far worse predicament after, you know, having gone down at the weekend when in a position that they might have actually got promoted had they won the game. So, like, I'd have doubts about their ability to recover from that. And just, like, it's a big carrot for Monaghan as well. Like, if they win this game, I think they play Antrim, and then, you know, should they win that, go on to play the winner of Fermanagh and Down compared to the other side of the draw, which looks a bit difficult. So, you know, there's probably not as many people talking about Monaghan, you know, especially with Donegal and Tyrone on. So, you know, there's time for them to build momentum in the Championship.
Yeah, another interesting one they're doing, they're playing Michael Bannigan at centre-forward at number 11. Now, he played wing-back earlier on in the Championship. Then they play another defensive player like McInnesby or somebody on the wing. But apparently Bannigan played centre-half-forward for his club, Kieran. But his club play at junior level, and he played brilliantly there for them at junior level. But at the same time, he hasn't been overly impressive there for Monaghan in the last two games. And, like, a lot of managers say, I'll pick you on club form, but surely the tier that you play at for your club has to come into question here.
Yeah, there's a big step up there, you know. But you know, suppose suppose the time was to try these things out over the last two league matches to get ready for championship. And I'm sure the Banty is a smart enough man, and he's a good backroom team in around him that they'll know them things haven't worked, and I'm sure they'll rejig things come the weekend, and we could possibly see Conor McCarthy back out at that number 11 spot.
Yeah, exactly. I think they should do that, definitely. Predictions here, lads. Are we all going for Monaghan?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to see past Monaghan for this one.
Yeah, okay. Loud and Longford, lads. This is in Cusick Park. And to be honest with you, we don't probably have too much time to go into these games, so we'll just get a prediction on this one. I imagine Longford are in better form in the promotion race. A bit disappointed they didn't play against Cork, but maybe that rest will have done them the world of good. I'm going for Longford in this one. Connor?
Longford for me, Willie, yeah.
Kieran?
Yeah, I'll go for Longford, but you just wonder if that week off and Larry getting a win against Down last weekend might upset the Tart.
But yeah, well, it might be a lesson. It'd be a lesson learned from Longford if it does, because they'll be out of the championship. Offaly versus Carlow, as this is in O'Connor Park, and like we talked it with Gerard Brennan here last week, Carlow trying to change a little bit of the style of play that they've been used to over the last 3 or 4 years. Ran up 217 against Sligo and conceded 215. Not a scoreline you would have been used to. From Carlow, had a walkover then in the last round of the league. Offaly are a good team. They're a good footballing team, not very defensive. This could be the game of the weekend, potentially, lads, and two teams that might go at each other. I'm going to go for Offaly because, very, very simple, in a shootout, Carlow have Paul Broderick, heavy scoring forward. Offaly have more. They've Niall McNamee, they've Anton O'Sullivan, and they have a few more. So I think for that reason, I'll go for Carlow and a home advantage here. Kieran?
Yeah, I'll go for Offaly in this one.
Connor?
Yeah, same. I just think they're a bit further on in their development. You know, as much as I'd like a win for Carlow for Gerard Brennan, I'm going to give, like, John Mann has had a couple of years with Offaly. He hasn't played a lovely style of football as well. So I fancy them. I agree. It could be a really good game too.
Yeah, okay. Waterford Limerick, lads. This is on Saturday night in Dungarvan. Limerick, obviously, Division 4 champions, going really well. To be honest with you, this could go either way. I'm going to go for Limerick based on current form in Division 4. What about you, Kieran?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Limerick. They have really developed this year in Division 4 and they've got promotion, like, you know, so the spirits will be high and they'll want to make a start in the championship with a win and try to progress.
Yeah, Connor?
Limerick for me too, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Wexford Wicklow, lads. This is a more difficult one to call, but after talking to Davy Burke, I'm jumping in on the Wicklow side. Like, I mean, a good direct style of football, forwards winning their own ball, couple of ball winners in their full forward line. He's a very, very positive man. The only tricky one about this is that they're going down to the exact same ground that they won at last weekend in the championship and being asked to do the exact same thing again. Now, in fairness to him, he was very honest to say, listen, if we do the same thing that we did last week, it won't be good enough. He's looking at this, which is the right way to look at it. He's looking at it like a county final replay, which is a good analogy that he came up with. And he said, you have to pull out a surprise for the replay and don't go with the exact same thing that you went with the week before, which was honest enough stuff, Kieran. I'm in the Wicklow camp on this one. But again, this is more of a 50-50 one, not as easy to call it.
Yeah, looking back at that league match, 2 weeks ago, like, it could have went either way, I'm sure Wexford would have learned a lot from it, and I'm going to sway towards Wexford in this one.
Right, okay, Connor, what about you?
Davy Burke didn't tell you the surprise he's going to pull out for the weekend.
I think I would be a little bit too intrusive to even ask that question. I wouldn't get the answer I want, and I might be seen as a bigger bollocks than I already am for even asking it.
By all accounts, they were really good value for that win too. I just, it's, you have to wonder about the amount of shadow boxing that was going on and stuff. And I think it's really hard, because there wasn't much in it in the end, it's really hard to beat the same team twice in such a short space of time. Just given all that, I'm going to give a very hesitant nod to Wexford.
Yeah, and it's actually an interesting one, because it's often the case with managers, when you win a game, you stay with the same team. Like, Mick O'Dwyer used to break my heart. Like, I mean, if you're not on the starting team and the team wins, forget about it. It doesn't matter what you do. They never change as a winning team. But for Davy Burke to say that he's going to pull a surprise out and potentially change something from the team that won. You know, traditionally, that's not usually the way managers go about it. So fair play to him for doing that. The final one and the big one here is Leitrim versus Mayo. This is in Carrick on Shannon. Look, it's very hard. It's literally impossible to see past a Mayo win here, Connor. Like, I mean, you're in good form. I made the point on Monday that in a weird way, Mayo are going to Division 2, but they look in better shape than Galway, who have came third in Division 1.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think I wasn't actually that disappointed after the Tyrone game because we came from a position from being like 7 or 8 points down, got back to within the point, could have drawn or won the game. And to be honest, just looking back on it, I think the mistakes, there was stuff there that you can easily work on to try and correct the mistakes that Mayo made against Tyrone. And I'd agree, just watching Galway against Dublin, I probably would agree we're in better shape. I would worry about Roscommon down the line, providing we do get over next week or this weekend. But like, there shouldn't be any issue for Mayo and Carrick and Shannon this weekend. Should be comfortable win.
Yeah, okay, Kieran, I'll throw this over to you. We won't spend too much time on Mayo because they get a disproportionate amount of analysis on this show.
No.
Very proportionate, really.
Between their trials and tribulations, I find myself speaking about Mayo way more than I should.
Yeah, no, I think Terry Highland's done a good job in Leitrim. He's made them more competitive, you know, but I think this is just going to be a step too far for them at the weekend, and expect Mayo to win comfortably enough.
Yeah, I'll be going for Mayo as well. So there you have it, lads. It's an absolute bumper weekend of Gaelic football, and we'll be back on Monday to review it all. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck. Thanks, lads.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.